The goal of this podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising. And we do that every week by sharing the stories and advice of those rocking it on the other side. Today, we're excited to introduce Aaron Francois, Associate Strategy Director at Laundry Service and the visionary founder of Black Visionaries. Aaron's passion for social media and creative strategy has not only shaped successful campaigns for clients, but also empowered personal brands. Aaron's journey is one of purpose and impact. As the founder of Black Visionaries, he's dedicated to democratizing access to resources and information for Black professionals, creating a more inclusive and equitable industry. So in this episode, Aaron shares an array of brand-building expertise coupled with invaluable career navigation tips. His unique approach is not just about winning strategies. It's about driving societal change through marketing, a field he believes is the most influential in shaping perceptions of brands, people, and culture. Growing up, Aaron saw misrepresentations of his culture in the media and made a promise to himself to change that narrative. Today, he is doing just that. His passion for culture and keen understanding of diverse perspectives enable him to develop more impactful work. So today, we talk with Aaron. He'll tell us his tips and tricks, how he stumbled his way and broke into strategy, a field that I'm often confused by and struggle explaining how to break into. So we will leave it to Aaron to tell us how to do that. And you're going to want to connect with Aaron. And to do that, or any of our past guests, really, all I ask you to do is leave a 5-star review on an Apple Podcasts and a nice, perhaps 5-word review on Apple Podcasts. Then reach out to me on LinkedIn. My name is Gino Schellenberger. And I'll make a personal introduction. Now, on with the show. This is a great one, people. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. And as a usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right. Aaron Francois. Cool name.
What's up, my guy? How you doing?
Good, man. I'm excited to talk with you. What are we going to talk about today? You want to talk about advertising, breaking in? Sound good to you?
I mean, the combination, we can do them both, right? I think it only makes sense.
If you weren't in advertising, what job would you be in?
Damn. I mean, I was actually a professional dancer before advertising. So I'd probably be, still doing that.
How does that work? How do you break into professional dancing in 2 sentences?
And do it.
Where'd you do it at?
New York. So I'm born and raised here. There's a dance community called the Light Feet Community, which at a point was called Getting Light, for the New Yorkers who know that, like the Harlem Shake and like all that kind of, all that entire era of dancing. So I was like pretty involved in that community.
Getting Light and then the Harlem Shake. I remember the Harlem Shake.
Yeah, it was a time.
The dance trend are we talking about?
No, not to see the 2 different ones.
Okay, good.
You're talking about like the social media.
Yeah, that was wild. People.
Yeah, I'm talking about like the real New York City Harlem Shake. You should look it up after this discussion.
Okay. I'm Chicago guy, so that doesn't excuse me though, right?
You got to get, it's the cultural relevance part.
That's all right. And that's what we're, and I guess that kind of ties nicely, cultural relevance. I mean, you are in strategy. You're an associate strategy director at Laundry Service. So I want to know about that. You need to be tapped into culture a strategist. You need to know the insights. You need to know what people are thinking, when they're thinking it, what's trending, what's not, so you can make decisions for better creative. Is that accurate? Did I just try to string together a transition there that doesn't make any sense?
I think it did. I'll give you a B.
B.
You like bees.
Yeah, we're talking offline. Yeah.
I think that, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. I'm shocked because usually when I tell people like, yeah, I work at Laundry Service, it's either, oh, I know them, or wait, like, why'd you go to washing clothes? So like, I always have to explain the two, but, Laundry Service is a full service style creative agency that does focus on social primarily. So for most of our clients, we are social agency of record. For me as a strategist, I really do view like my role and like a lot of the people in my department, our role is like creative strategists, because we get the opportunity to be a Swiss Army knife, tapping into like brand strategy via like narratives and understanding tone, and also some calm. So figuring out where we want to show up, why we want to show up there, and what the audience is thinking. And lastly, like really partner with the creatives. Like I call myself the creative's bestie, because like I don't just want to inspire you to do dope work. I want to do dope work with you. Right. So how do we kind of work together to bring that to life and do things that make other people jealous they didn't think of it first? Because that's what puts a fire in my heart when I see something where I'm like, damn, that's, you know, that's crazy. Like, I wish I would have thought of that. So yeah, that's a lot of the day to day. And we serve a good amount of clients, some brands that people may not realize, like we're working on Gatorade. We're working on Google. We're working on some big campaigns. We did a big campaign with Google recently with Candace Parker for the Chromebook, the cloud gaming version of it, and super dope. And I even learned a lot about Candace and like just hearing her experience as a gamer. So I think that's the fun part about being a strategist too. Like it's like this continued quest for knowledge that as long as you're learning, you're always going to get better at your job.
And yeah.
The NI Laundry Service has allowed me to do that tenfold.
I like what you were saying about being the bestie, because the best strategists, they don't just tee off the creative brief and then walk away. The best strategists are there. They're constantly refining and checking in with creatives and making sure that whatever the creatives are making, art directors specifically, copywriters, if we're trying to connect with the audience here, the strategists should be checking in on those reviews internally to make sure the work is flowing nicely. It's on brand, on strategy, right, and it's following all of the check boxes.
Right, right. Yeah, for sure. And I think the biggest way to do that sometimes is just to be a human being, right? I think we fall in the habit of not making strong relationships because we think there's a method that you have to do it a certain way. There's a formula and every person needs to be treated with this specific approach. And you forget that it's just human interaction. Like as if you met a person on the street, how would you have a random conversation? I'm of the mind, like I'll set up a call with someone and I will say, hey, set up 15 minutes, 20 minutes versus a chat and my introduction to you. Let's not talk about work. What makes you feel warm inside? Like what's the thing that makes you happy, right? Like I get a good gauge of what your creative and emotional sparks are. So now when we're working on things, I know what is of value to you. What is the thing that motivates you and makes you feel like really good about the work that you're doing? And it allows us to work better together because we have a better sense of what each other's preferences are and like what are the things that we generally hold to like a high standard when we're working on something.
And I'm kind of biased that for those starting out, that's why it's pretty important, I believe, to show up in person as much as you can. Because it's just easier to gain that confidence and those connections in person when you're just starting out. Now, it doesn't mean all the like senior people are going to be there, but you can start crafting those narratives and those connections if you're in person. But even if you're off and you're remote, like those quick calls, I just randomly call people when I see that they're green. They don't get a notification. They just get a ring of Gino, stress them out. But just setting up a quick call and doing all that. And I liked how you're demystifying the methodology. I think to those that are on the outside looking in, they think that there's these specific frameworks and steps. But what you said was so perfect. And actually, I really enjoyed, and it's very true now that I'm working in the industry. Mm-hmm. It's just human interaction, these conversations like, hey, we actually found this additional like insight or this other thing to tweak the brief. And that could be while people are having coffee in the morning.
Right. Right.
So I like that. There's not always just like this blueprint to follow.
I mean, it's even as simple as like you talk about your interests, you'll be surprised what you and another person may have in common. It's not only with creatives, though. It's like with everyone on your team, right? Like your account people, your project managers, even like your other strategy peers. I've talked to people. I found out someone on my team is also interested in NBA 2K. I'm a gamer. I play 2K competitively, sometimes to a fault, right? So like knowing that. And
wait, do you like 2K, you said?
Yeah.
NBA 2K. What year is your favorite one?
What year is my favorite? I would say 20 because.
Really?
Partially because everyone was home due to COVID and there were just so many people online playing. And I'm community minded in everything I do. So even in gaming, like the more I felt the power of community, the more I enjoyed the game.
Now that's a good answer. but it's not the best shooting function.
Are you going to shooting function? I mean, but shooting has gotten low key easier. If you're talking like 19 was good for shooting, right?
I like 16.
16 has some people that suck like low key, but
that's me.
It's like, and you like 16.
It was so easy.
It didn't really take much to do that. Now, yeah. Now at 24, shooting is so much harder, bro. It's like,
I can't believe it's already at 24. That like the last time I played like, a lot, I remember it was in college.
I went from being the marksman on my team to taking one entire month just to learn how to shoot. And I was adamant though. And now my percentages, they're where they need to be. Completely un-NBA realistic, but they are where they need to be.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. Okay, so back on track though.
I go track.
I just wanted to call you out there. 16 was the best.
Allegedly.
The easiest for sure.
That's what they said.
I like the blacktop mode. I like playing that with my buddies, like in person.
We used to play blacktop on vacation. That's like a good thing to play with people that don't play 2K like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm definitely not that good. So where were we at?
That's up to you, man.
Let's get back to laundry service. I think so you mentioned some great clients there. Recent work you're proud of was with Candace Parker, is that correct?
Yep.
Any other big ones that you want to give a shout out? I think everybody can go to their website. But you said full service creative agency based in New York. Is that accurate?
Well, they have an LA office and a New York office as well. Okay.
And independent or holding company owned?
We're under the Wasserman Network, so Wasserman Sports and Music Entertainment.
Wait a minute.
So
Wasserman's like, isn't that sports agency?
The Wasserman All Laundry Service, yep. Which most people are like, to your point and your reaction, they're like, oh, wow. But
that's like the Wasserman itself is what? Can you help me understand this? Because I've heard that there is like, I was actually on my way to Chapel Hill and there is a parent there. His son played on the team at Chapel Hill and he was signed by Wasserman. Am I connecting the dots here?
Yeah. Wasserman is pretty much like a sports, music and culture agency. They represent a lot of talent across each of those industries and they're continuously ever growing. But laundry service is pretty much like, think of if like how a lot of big companies have like they're now in-house ad agencies. Like think of laundry service as like now the ad agency arm of Wasserman's experience or what they can offer to other brand clients.
Right. So the sports, like there's like agents and sports agents that they have and Wasserman. Yeah.
And on the WAS side, you'll probably have like an agent representing this particular person. And there may be moments where they work on an experience for bigger clients, i.e. like I've done work with AT&T or Google in the past via Wasserman, but also for laundry services side as like social AOR, like we're like doing their day-to-day or larger campaign social activations and finding ways to do like more heavy campaign style work.
Right. Got it. Okay. That actually, I guess then what do you think makes it different working a part of the Wasserman network as opposed to a WPP, a more standardized traditional holding company? I guess, what are the strengths, weaknesses? What are you thinking?
For sure. I think, fortunately, I worked in a couple. I worked in Omnicom, WPP, and IPG. Yeah. So
the usual suspects, yeah.
I run the gambit, right? But I think, in terms of the differences from a weakness standpoint, I think there's not as many sister agencies. So like getting to know more pieces of the business. And
are there other agencies or is laundry service predominantly the
creative? Wasserman overseeing like they have other arms, but they're not like agencies, like how laundry service is like an
app. Right.
There's just other business.
Oh, that's cool though. I think that's cool. You say that's a weakness, but it's also a strength. I'm sure you're going to get to that.
Well, of course. And I have to use the word like weakness even lightly because I don't really
right.
Weakness, but I just think
it's a differentiator. It's not a weakness.
Let's just say differences more so.
Yeah. Because you can't call up another agency and like collaborate on a brief necessarily as easily. I get that. But then also it's like you get all the best projects. Yeah.
So like when we get an ad campaign, it comes to us. Right?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, it's going to come to WPP, but it's going to.
And then they're going to fight over, the agencies are going to fight over. Like you can see some holding companies where agencies will pitch against each other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So a lot less of that experience and also an ability to kind of dial in on the work that we're doing as like the specialist, and also like being for my lens, like being a strategist and being able to like be the Swiss Army knife. I appreciate that. It's not, there's not as much of like, oh, here's a comm strategy team, and here's the brand strategy team, here's an audience strategy. I've seen a lot of agencies get super segmented, and I've actually talked to someone about this recently. Like, strategy is like the multiverse. I'm a nerd, so like that's where I go, and like there's so many different layers, and with each of those layers is a different outcome. But when you have like a person who can pretty much like mix and match each of those pieces, but they have a specialization area, that to me is of more value, because you understand how everything works, but you know your bread and butter. And when you people together like that, you now have less worry, because it's not as many chefs in the kitchen, right? So that's a big part of like what I think is very valuable about the way I approach strategy specifically, but even just generally like working on the under Wasserman, getting exposure to like sports, understanding like how talent management works more specifically amongst my peers. And even at times, like I know people who get to work on both laundry service work and Wasserman projects. So like being able to do both and not solely restricted to like the day-to-day ad campaigns is also a big part of it. And there's room to flex if that's your actual interest area. So that to me is super dope. I mean, it gives you an experience outside of, you know, the day-to-day ad agency.
I like it. I want to know about how you broke into advertising. And I know that you didn't necessarily start in strategy, but you broke in. So at what point did you realize you wanted to make ads or be a part of the ad making process for a living?
Man, I think my route was very interesting, because I think I got like hints of advertising and marketing throughout my life, and I never really like fell into it until like my senior year of college. I could kind of take you
still early. I mean, you still got it though. Some people, you know, do 10 years in another industry and then they want to.
That is
so you found out in college, you said around your senior year that this was a good route.
Yeah. And I'm even then, like I didn't go straight into strategy, but basically I took this course. I went to a community college at first, BMCC in New York. I took this course called Essentials of Advertising. And with that course, it was, if I'm not mistaken, like class didn't apply to my major or something like that. So the financial aid I was receiving didn't cover the class. And they were like, hey, look, you can take this course, but we will not pay for it. It is all out of pocket. You figure it out. I actually stuck it through. I was like, you know what? This is one of the best courses I've ever taken. I paid for it out of pocket. Professor was amazing, and it paid off, because it ended up turning into, we having such a good relationship with the professor. They got me a job on campus. I was a tutor. And then when I went to my 4 year, I went to Baruch College in New York. I ended up working as a tutor my whole way through college. So I had a job where essentially I worked in a library basically. And when I didn't have students, I had time to study. So like I was getting paid to study. Right. So that made the path a lot easier.
I love that little advice too, like as an undergrad, like if you can find jobs in a library or that's close to your industry, even if it's not close to your industry, like library job.
Yeah.
Do that. Get your homework done.
That lets you, you know, get a nice quiet setting where you can focus, like just do it. And I took the course, I got the, you know, got the experience. And then I moved into my 4 year, joined a club. I was like vice president of a PR club on campus, and we hosted this PR firm, where one of the members of the PR firm for a panel networked my way through, had a conversation. We had a follow-up. I'm like, hey, trying to secure an internship this summer. If you guys have any openings, would love to just get my resume floated. I don't expect any promises, but I'm just going to be forthcoming. I really do want to, you know, be able to get experience with you guys. I think the work you're doing is amazing. Gave him my resume, turned it into an opportunity, and I ended up working in PR as an intern, right? Went to PR, I was like, wow, my first internship. I also in the same breath was like, hell no, not PR.
That's what's beautiful about internships, right? You figure out what's good and what's not. No harm, no foul.
I call it the trial and error period of your life, right? So you go, internships are for figuring out what you do not want to do. And that is
like every day is a trial sometimes for me. I'm getting tried all the time.
Fact, man. Such a fact.
But, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, that may be true. Some days are trials. But
yeah.
So with that internship experience, I did learn I enjoyed like metrics, right? And like seeing,
what?
Seeing how people
get out of
like,
here.
Yeah. Like how people were like navigating and experiencing things and like going from this destination to the next web destination and why, what would drive them to comment on a thing about social and following social conversation. But it was just like all the media of it all, right?
Yeah. So the storytelling behind the media and the journey.
Exactly. So I went to,
it's pretty dope.
Yeah. I went back to college. Exactly. As you were being a little shady, but now you're like, no,
I got it. You got me. I thought you were just like trying to get an Excel and do pivot tables and chop it up in there.
It was interesting because when I first went back to college, I was like in this like the MSAT competition.
Yeah. What was your brief?
We did Taipei. It was like this frozen Asian food.
Yep.
And I tried it after college and I was like, hell no, sorry. No offense to that.
You can't advertise a bad product.
Hey, I didn't know any better, man. I was like, a product is fine.
I get worried about the NSAC. I'm not sponsored by the AAF, but I was in it. But like these kids are spending a year on one brief, which is a great experience. I get that to know the full process. But if you know you want to be a strategist or you know you want to be an art director or copywriter at a full service ad agency like yourself, I get worried that these 1 year long briefs are a waste of time. Now, that's the thing. It's not always the case.
I would debate that only because I think it depends on the school you're at. But I never say any experience is a waste of time because I think I'm working on some projects that do take a year to go live. It's reflective of reality, right? And there's some projects you do that are quick turn and they're done in like 2-3 months. Cool. All right, cool. Great working with you guys. I'll see y'all later. And there are other projects where it's like slow burn and it's going to be big at the end of it all. But you're working from January all the way to December just to get this like Christmas campaign live. And that's also a realistic perspective.
Yeah.
So I would kind of put that in perspective too, man, because you fall in love with the journey as well.
Yep. I agree. But if you see that you're in a bad NSAC scenario where the brief is bad or the team is not quite there, they're not dedicated, you don't have the proper leadership, then my POV is don't do it. Like if you don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, you were saying, first off, you're currently getting paid for all that hard work. These kids, I get worried that they're sticking it out just for sticking out sake, which there's merit in that. But if you don't see a light at the end of the tunnel and you spend that and your other time is not being spent on other briefs, then you could potentially see it through, get a decent experience, and then have a bad output for one campaign.
In most cases, at the end of it all, you come out with credits, though. Like it still contributes towards your graduation. And I think that's
That's
the part to consider too, right? Because it does like, it can be daunting. And if it doesn't feel like it's not going to work, it may not work. But the NSAC is, in my mind, is no different than doing like that ad campaign class that isn't involved with the NSAC when the whole semester you're working on a group project and at the end of it, you're going to present it and it may not even be the finished product. It's just, you're getting a bit more of a real-time agency experience. But I think when it comes to stuff like that, like the NSAC or like even similar ad competitions at the collegiate level, it's important to know or have a perspective on what your goal is coming out of that program and how you best can accomplish that goal if participating in that.
Right. Program. Like if your goal is just to figure out what this process we call advertising is and you want to explore the roles and like you're still figuring it out. Absolutely.
Yep.
I'm talking for like the seniors in college seniors that know exactly they want to be a strategist and they have it figured out. I get worried that it is a waste of time if the work itself is not great. That's why we created the Crowbar Awards, which is our award show. It's just, it's four briefs a year, 3 months on a brief. It's creative only. So you can do it with two other people. It's quick hit, right? If you do if you do four a year, you got pretty much a portfolio that you can kind of hammer in if you work on it. And 3 months for a spec work is probably pretty fine. Like that's why we built that out. Yeah.
I also think, to your point, well, one, dope that y'all are doing that. I actually didn't know about that. So I'd love to hear more after this.
Yeah. But we're always looking for guest judges, one a quarter. So
well, dope.
We can talk.
I think even with that, like it goes back to the point of like choosing your battles, right? Like,
yep,
what best serves your career.
And the goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Having the goal in mind for sure.
Like for me, I didn't really know media planning as in depth. I just was like, well, I know I like this thing. I did PR and I had a professor like, you should try media planning. So I spent the semester. I now had a year to learn a bit more about like, what, where does a media player come in and what role do I play? And that gave me like an understanding of enough to say when I applied for MAPE, which is like the Multicultural Advertising Internship Program.
Yep.
I knew intentionally to click the media comms planner box.
Nice. Nice.
As thing that I, versus like, you know, at that stage, you sometimes see all these roles and disciplines and you're like, I mean, like, which one do I pick? I want to be a strategist.
You had a route. You had it. I like that you had a POV there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it probably made for a better application. Mm-hmm. When you were applying and they're like, yeah, Aaron's great. He knows what he wants. Let's place him.
That's what they thought, right? Like that's what
yeah.
I thought.
And even if you're not sure and they think that, that's fine, right? You still got an internship out of it, mm-hmm. I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or job.
It landed me in, I got into the MAPE program, which they place you at an internship for the summer. I landed at Wieden & Kennedy that summer, which was cool.
That's a pretty good one in Portland.
I ended up in New York. But
in New York, that's a good one too.
It was still cool. Yeah. I learned a lot about myself, the work that they do as well. And also I went in like blank canvas. I actually didn't know what Wieden & Kennedy was.
I know. I love that.
Contrary.
That's going to be in the intro for sure.
Contrary to most of like the, you know, the ad junkies who are like, oh my God, advertising is my life. And I love advertising.
The ad nerds.
Yeah. And love them. Loved what they do. I'm an ad nerd with external interests as well. I put it
you
that
have
way.
To be. That's a real, I think we need to redefine ad nerd. Mm-hmm. It should be somebody that's like culturally in tune with the basics and the foundation of the classics and what, and the industry, mm-hmm. especially for strategists. Yeah.
I think we spend a lot of time like talking to ourselves, right? And not taking in from the outside world to make what we're doing more relevant. And that's where I like to learn the most, like, going to exhibits, right? Like talk, just engaging people, talking to people. Sometimes just laying in a park in the sun. Like I'm a big like summertime weather guy. So New York,
I need that. Yeah.
And cool. New York summer, they are amazing. But like, that's what helped me to really like take the experience all in holistically. And then when I walked into Wieden, I was like, well, I know I want to do dope work and this is an opportunity that can help me get to that stage of my career. So I'll take what I can, meet the people I can. And I was able to grow not just professionally, but also personally there. It gave me confidence as well. And that confidence, the funny thing is it kicked in later. Like it didn't kick in immediately into my next job. It kicked in like two and a half years later after that, where I realized, oh, when I worked here, I felt X, Y, and Z way. What is stopping me from finding those feelings again to feel empowered in the work that I do, which was like, freedom of expressing myself, right? Or showing up and talking about my things that I'm culturally interested in and how that can make the work we do better. And getting into the weeds of where our industry can go and talking about all the things that I do geek out about openly at work and not feeling like I need to hide like my personal interest, like as a nerd or a gamer or a sneakerhead, like all these things, all these layers, right? Showing, being able to show that off more freely and openly and not feeling like it needed to be like church and state in the way I approached work. That a lot of that came from like that early interaction, but it wasn't activated until like, I think someone had to keep giving me nudges, right? Like going to like conferences like Ad Color or thinking about my experience with MAPE or just talking to my peers in general. Eventually, like in the pre-2020, thank goodness, because I felt like after 2020, everyone was like, we want to be culturally sound. But like pre-2020, I just had like my own epiphany and I'm like, you know what? Like the facade is up. You're like, this is the work I want to create. This is Aaron Francois. I love sneakers. I'm going to wear them to work because it makes me feel empowered. Like how people have a power pose. I would say for me, it's like power footwear. Like when I wear certain kicks, I'm like, this is why I feel like top of my game, you know? So that was, it was things like that, that really helped me understand like where I could find my professional edge from and how does that continue to fuel me as I'm, you know, maneuvered on a day to day. And I went from media to eventually strategy by way of continuously listening to the voice in my head and trusting my gut.
I wanted to also kind of add my own experience with the podcast. I've been doing this for about 4 years now. And it didn't really spark confidence. It was a delayed confidence thing as well for me. It wasn't until I got like some bigger name guests and got like, but that was just through consistency. I guess the confidence in my professional life, I've always kept the podcast and my professional life separate because they are two different entities. I own this on the side. It never correlated. It never transferred to internally at where I work in my agency until like a year ago. It started to really kick in. Like, I have this amazing podcast. Like, people would talk about it. I would push it aside. Like, no, it's just something, a hobby. It's nothing that's important. But now I kind of own it and I'm trying to leverage it and help my people around me with it too. So that delayed confidence thing is interesting as well. Sometimes it takes like people bringing it up, or you go and see people that are proud of you and or reinforce you, or maybe you just need an epiphany on your own, right? Or a big moment to happen.
You said reinforcement. I just want to talk about that really quickly, because I think like that reinforcement is so special, but it's also necessary. And what's that? Because we look at it as like someone else validating you, and it's not always just about the validation. It's just like, sometimes seeing is believing. Like, sometimes you need to see someone else do it to feel like you can do it. Sometimes it's just coming to that point of like, huh, can I do this, and trying it. And when it works once, you have to believe it'll work again. Right. So like finding those micro moments and thinking about how you can create like even bigger and more frequent moments for yourself to have that same feeling. Like I always say, like when it comes to things that make you happy, or like finding your creative muse, think about a thing that you did as a child that made you feel like all warm and fuzzy inside. And how do you do the adult version of that? Right. So like that, and that to me is like a sense of like, oh, like getting validation or finding my special moments or my happiest points and turning that into something even bigger.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, that's why I game, man. I've always that game. I would say that's one. Another thing that I've done since I was young is like hanging out with my peers. Thing. I'm very big into like communal events, like social things. So not just like gaming, but like technology, but also game nights, like inviting friends over, doing like big board game nights. And
I love that.
Yeah. I'm very traditional with it. I'm very competitive Uno player. I will say that.
You hide some cards sometimes.
Oh, bro, please. If no need to hide cards, we're guaranteed to win, you know? So. But I would say like doing things that allow me to activate that, because I remember when I was a kid, my happiest moments were like my family was like together, right? And we just got to enjoy each other's company. So I started to curate moments that allowed me to bring my peers together and enjoy each other's company as well.
Oh, you know what I do? I create these events for my friends. I take like my PR planning and promotional skills. And I've done chili competitions. I've done a cocktail competition where I made myself a judge. I actually got a hot dog eating competition going where we gave out t-shirts to the winners. And we got a company. You guys have Nathan's. We have Vienna in Chicago. Vienna donated 150 hot dogs and we raised money for charity. So I like to do those too. Like,
that is dope. Little
fun. Thank you. Dope. Yeah. It's fun, man. Like to make signage and like hype it up. Like people would be like, hey, I have a birthday coming up. Can you help me plan it? I'm like, yeah, especially those September birthdays when everybody's got the same September birthdays. They're like, I need to differentiate. How can I do it? I'm like, all right, we'll need $1,000 for a bar tab and some t-shirts. But I like that. So, but you broke into, so you got into media planning from the MAPE, you said, and didn't want to stick with that, or strategy was your route. I guess, widened, you gain your confidence, but how did you get to the strategy part, right? When did you find out you love strategy?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it was, so 2019, we had founded our first ever like ERG, which at the time, this is like before everyone's like, oh, let's do an ERG. Like we need to raise money. We're just like, hey, we're trying to do this thing. In service of the Black professionals who are within this network. We just kind of like, it was crazy because we sent this like cryptic email, me and a friend of mine, we worked together. When I say friend, like at the time it was coworker friends, but now it's like really good friends. But we sent this email to all the people who were like Black identifying, like, hey, We're trying to start this ERG. Are y'all game? Like, let us know. Everyone was like, hell yeah, let's do it.
Employee resource group, everybody listening. Yes.
All your resource groups. Apologies. You know?
Yep. No, you're good. I know. I just want to make sure they know. So you sent out this email.
Yeah, employee-led resource group. So he's like, set up an email. Everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. We started hosting like intimate social gatherings, right? And that's sounds fine and dandy. What does that have to do with strategy? It allowed us to eventually take that understanding and transfer it into like business results, right? Like people felt better at work. Their output was becoming even more efficient on a day-to-day basis because they had a sense of community. They felt supported at the
better agency. Ideas. Yeah.
Yep. They felt like they were able to communicate more what they needed or wanted to see for their growth.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we just started to get tapped for projects that as brands wanted to be more culturally relevant. It wasn't just for the Black community, but just from an inclusive standpoint in general, we would start to talk with like leadership and other arms of the agency to really get perspective on what does it look like to be an intentional, not just an ally, but an advocate for diverse communities or underrepresented groups across the board, eventually sparking the creation of different ERGs, like servicing people with disabilities, women, LGBTQ+, like all pretty much like all these different subgroups that existed. And then it went from there to being a part of the review process where like people get graded on their DEI impact in the agency. So now
we're going
to be able to do that. All in all, I was like, wow, this is great. I ended up getting promoted to a media supervisor, but at the end of the day, it was still media supervisor, right? And
sure.
A day
promotion, job, that's good.
It was amazing, right? I was grateful for that. But I also think the day job was get this work live and get it in front of as many eyeballs as possible. But the creative was already done. When I was learning the most about being a lead for the ERG was the creating. And I wanted to find a way to fuse the two. There was unfortunately not a swim lane for me to do that. But I was like, damn, like there's so much cultural understanding and learning that I have like up here that I'm not able to pour into this work, particularly in this space. And then I made like the adamant decision to pivot into strategy. So the game plan at that moment was like, okay, I know I need to meet. I want to be a strategist. So many levers to pull. Which one is the best for me? I called up every person I knew who was a strategist that I was like pretty close to. Started picking their brain. Like, this is what I do for work. What do you do for work? What are some things you think are transferable that I'm doing right now? How should I frame my resume? What is the best area?
Find those champions.
Yep. And finding people, not just champions, but people who will really share and not gatekeep information in general, because I think people, you'll find some folks who they may be a little nervous about giving information, but you also have to, in order to get their guard down, be willing to give more than you take. I think sometimes we get in the habit of taking, and not lending ourselves or our resources to people as well. And I'm always open to like, whatever you need, let me know. Like, I'm here for you. And after that, it turned into me just like, chatting with a bunch of people across different places, and they were like, yo, you should consider comms planning or comms strategy. At the time, I'm like, oh yeah, I did that at Wyden. And that, to that point, right? Like, I'm like, oh, I did that at Wyden because it was a hybrid media planning, comms planning role. I know comms planning was a little bit less in the weeds of like the budgeting and Excel spreadsheets. I lived in Excel for like 3 years or 3 or 4 years already in my career in that point. And I was like, yeah, I think it's time to make this pivot. It's cool. To be able to do like the spreadsheets, and it taught me a lot. I do plan my vacations in Excel, but I also was like, hey, now this is a skill set. This is what I've learned, how to read data, how to synthesize it, how to
bring it into a interpret story, it, digest right? it. Yeah.
And I'm taking that perspective and the cultural nuance I have and fusing them.
Yeah.
A more equipped comp strategist than some of my own peers, because while they can take some data, they didn't know how to slice it, cut it, even pull it in general and read
it. That's like, this is like the perfect storm for comms planning and like that strategy. Yeah. This
well, my mind, man, like once you learn how the money works, you're set for good, you know? So that's always what I tell people, like understand the money, like what is, when it goes, well, when the money comes to you, how can you make work that actually can come to life? Cause I think when you don't understand budgets, you don't understand how to make like salvageable ideas, because you just go big idea. This sounds fire. This is what we're going to do. And the pilot's like, well, we only got like 100K, so we can't actually like get this gigantic blimp to fly.
It changes things
from Europe to the US. But
yeah, it humbles things. Yeah.
So like learning the financial piece of it allowed me to help the team come up with ideas that were actually executable and also like still dope and it's on the phone, right? So that was where the media part of my brain came into play. And then in that moment, I worked very closely with creative, and I was like, this is what I want to keep doing, like more of this.
So you got the media supervisor promotion. You made some calls, and then you identified comm strategy was the next pivot. Mm-hmm. How'd you do that?
I ended up, after I figured out comm strategy was the next pivot, I just started shooting my resume out. I started chatting with people. I believe in not always chatting to ask, but just chat to chat, right? And continuing to do what I was already doing. I'm not just talking to strategists now. I'm talking to people who work in places that may be of interest, understand their journey, understand their experience, and you know, the kind of work that they're into doing. And if the opportunity presents itself or it feels right, I say, hey, I'm actually in the market for a new role. Would love if I could float my resume by you.
So you're having conversations, you're connecting with people outside the current organization you were working.
Yeah. Yeah. And eventually they'd be like, yeah, like, hell yeah, send it over. And I've sent my resume over to folks. And I had a very good friend of mine who was a part of like the Ad Color Future cohort when I did that in 2018. And they were like, yo, like, bet, send me your resume. Sent it straight to department head. And then they just like turned into a snowball of interviews out of nowhere.
I love it. And then you got the job?
And then I got the job. You know, you had to secure the bag, bro.
And where was that at?
That was at RGA.
In New York?
Yep. I worked in RGA in New York.
When were you there?
For about 2 years, from 2021 to early this year, actually. So Audio Service is a very recent thing. I started there in March.
Got it. I was at RGA pre-pandemic.
Okay.
And they had a really cool office. I'm not sure what's going on, if they still have that New York office, but it just came up with my snap memories. I was like, this place is cool.
Yeah, I was there like fresh in the middle of it, right in the thick of
online.
I'm sure we know some of the same people.
Oh, I don't know anybody. Well, I just was there as like a bright-eyed young.
Okay.
Tour. Yeah.
It's like purely executional.
Yeah. I was just like trying to figure out stuff. Amazing. What would you tell yourself now that you know this might be the most important part for listeners, right?
Mm-hmm.
For those that want to go straight in comms planning, what would you say to them to break in directly? Is there a direct route from college, or maybe not even college? Mm-hmm. From college right into comms planning, how can they do that? How can they expedite this process? They listen to this podcast, they connect with you, they know that they love comms planning, they did their research, they know what agencies, what can they, like, how can they differentiate themselves?
For sure, man. I think, well, it may sound a little cliche, but I think the first thing I tell anyone is to learn to fall in love with the journey, because when you fall in love with it, it feels less difficult as you're navigating the changes. That being one, two, just continue making relationships, and you have to water your seeds in order for them to become flowers. And when you forget that, you're like expecting for like growth and plants to sprout from a seed that you just threw into the ground and said like, hey, look, I did that. Right. And it doesn't matter if you're looking to go into an adjacent industry and make the pivot, or if you're looking to go straight into the role. Your relationships are going to get you farther than any set of qualifications. And it sounds unfair, but it's also realistic. And I think this industry has shown a lot of that to many people time and time again. Especially now, like, we're in an industry where a lot of people who are overqualified are applying for roles because they straightforward need the income. And that is the reality. So make relationships with people and be intentional about how you do that. So in that way, when an opportunity arises, you remain top of mind, but also for the right reasons.
Yeah. I guess, how can we do that? I mean, like, people in college then, mm-hmm. how can they make these meaningful connections, like going to these conferences?
I will interrupt you really quickly though.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think being in college, to me, that's a superpower, bro.
I know.
You have the opportunity to say, I have no idea what you do, please talk. And like, people are 95% of the time, in my experience, people are going to talk to you. Because the fact that you're a college student and you're probably the most interesting part of their day in a long time, right? Because yes, our industry is dynamic and we do all this different work, but at the end of the day, like, the general setup is similar. Like, you wake up, you get into a team, the team status, you get an update, something didn't go according to plan, thing gets rectified, go to bed, you do it all over again the next day, right? Oh, and that's cool. That's really the ad to that, the ad template, right? So
yeah,
like more flavor to the day, it makes someone more enthused to have that conversation. So
take yeah. it,
like go in not knowing. Nobody expects you to be the expert.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good reminder. And there's all these different organizations that you're a part of and even you founded. I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Black Visionaries. Tell me about that. How can that help people connect and break in and thrive in advertising?
For sure, man. So Black Visionaries is my brain baby. It is an organization that I founded with the original intention of just bringing together some dope Black professionals that I knew that within my network that I felt were just one or two degrees separated, just having not done similar programs.
You know them around, you've seen them on the LinkedIns and other conferences, maybe not directly. So you want to pull these people in?
Yep. And I think, so for me, the first Black Visionaries event was a Black Visionaries brunch. That's how it all started.
Brunch.
I got a financial stipend from an award that I received from the 4A's. It was called the Billy Davis Award. For all MAPE alumni, basically. And it came with a financial stipend. I used that money to host the first brunch. I brought 30 people that I had faith would probably show up. I was like, y'all are my people. I'm trying to do this thing. I just want to celebrate you because you're doing so much dope work. And I want to expose you to this community of doers just like yourself. Here, you don't have to pay anything, just like come, you know? It was very makeshift. I chose this like venue in Brooklyn somewhere randomly, like too. It wasn't even like next to a train or anything, but like everyone, they showed up. Out of the 30 people I invited, 29 people showed up, right? To tell you like how tight the community was.
And you invited 30, 29 showed up?
Yep.
Who didn't show up?
Yeah, we'll even have to get into
that's
that.
That's good. That's amazing.
We ain't even got to go. No, but it was.
That's great.
It was amazing, man. And they were like, yo, this was like one of the most transformative experiences I've ever been through because the tables were even set up where like everyone sits with someone they don't know. Like because I had a better sense of who knows who, I like do the table
intentionally.
Like you're sitting with complete strangers, but there's curated conversations. So you're talking about like, what do you want your legacy to be? What are your obstacles?
Damn.
Like what is like the hardest thing you've had to accept along your journey? Like things like that get really deep, but you're talking about that with strangers, right? So now you create what I like to call universal accountability. Because once you say it, that it becomes the realest thing ever. And that was like a big part of like what we did there. Now, after that event, everyone's like, yo, this was dope. So what's the next one? I'm like, this was just going to be a one-time deal. But they were like, hell no. Like, we're not going to let you get off the hook like that. So I did what I knew how to do, which was do comm strategy, reach my audience and use social media. I tapped a mentee and one of my best friends who was also my roommate at the time. So I was like, yo, I'm trying to do this thing and I really need your help because I'm only one man. Can y'all help me? And we just started like creating content on social, right? Like just relatable video. You can check us out at Black Visionary.
I gotta watch all these videos.
Yeah, yeah. They're pretty funny, I won't lie.
Me when the new hire asked me who they replaced. What does it say?
My first appointment. I'd like
to
remember it
that way. Oh my gosh. That's good.
they were like, but because of that, it was all like corporate / relatable ideas, but also veering on the side of like servicing corporate professionals, entrepreneurs, because professional in itself is something that is a bit more fluid than we tend to realize. So we did that. And then we were like, cool, we did this one branch. Now we need to think about what are other things we can do. We started partnering with other brands who had similar missions of bringing together Black professionals or professionals all around in general. While our community was distinctively like the Black professional community, we were like, at the end of the day, the distribution of resources needed to be something that we can provide to anyone at most stages of their career. And not just like entry level. We're talking like career vets that want to give back and find ways to mentor. And even the mid-level, because I think mid-level professionals actually are the ones who go through the hardest struggles sometimes because they're in this awkward middle spot where everyone kind of forgets about them. And it's like sink or swim, like, hey, you ain't entry level and you're not seasoned enough where you could call the shot. So get out, my guy. And that was a big part of like how we navigated that. We turned those partnerships into eventually the second annual brunch, which was earlier this year. We went from 30 people to 90. You brought in some dope.
That's triple, I believe.
Yeah. You know, threefold, my guy.
Incredible.
It was we were able to bring some partners in. So we partnered with like CAA, AdColor, the One Club for Creativity, the 4-H Foundation, and the Urban Male Leadership Academy at BMCC. So like a lot of these dope partners who just, they believed in the vision and they were invested in helping us bring it to life. And that turned into other events later in the year. We did an initiative called Community Highlights, which as people were getting impacted by mass layoffs, we started to create like virtual resumes for them, like a one-sheeter. So we would just fill out a form and we would highlight you on our social and blast it out. So we ended up doing a lot more than like that one brunch, right? Because the goal is to create for the community. So Black Visionaries is really, it's like a peer-to-peer platform that allows everyone to not just like find resources or access to community, but also feel actively pulled into by way of other people understanding, connecting, and also getting from us and learning from, you know, what our community is doing on a day-to-day. So we have quite the growth path. We also have a LinkedIn group now. So feel free to hit me up if you want to join it.
I love it. And I love when it's so easy, right? Like people are curious, like how do you balance podcasts or what you're doing with your full-time job and all the other stuff you love to do. But when you have like a North Star that's so beneficial, it's human and easy to get on board with, that's guiding you, I'm sure it's kind of like, it just keeps you motivated. It's not, sometimes it can feel like work, I'm assuming, right? Because you have to do stuff, right? Of course, it's like there's tasks and there's deadlines, but you can get reminded very easily, like this is so beneficial, so impactful for so many people. So yeah. I'm assuming that also resonates with you.
I also think, I mean, yeah, man, but I also would say you start to learn. I'm of the mind that whenever something, when you love something enough, you learn to find time.
Oh, but, yeah.
Also, but,
you know, people, like what you said about the student thing, or really any conversation, my thing is I can always find 30 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes every day, no matter what, to talk with somebody.
Yep.
I don't believe that somebody has booked for 24 hours straight. I can always find 15 damn minutes to talk with somebody. Hey, quick phone call. What are you thinking? What's on your mind? Boom, I can figure it out.
And it's truly that simple. And there are ways to streamline it. Like I made a Calendly link.
Right.
If you need, I don't even have to like go look at my calendar anymore. Like,
right.
Put this link, use it to your heart's desire.
And even beyond the link, I'm like, if there's nothing on this Calendly, I can figure it out. I can always find 30.
We'll figure it out because some of those blocks are for mental maintenance. Right. So like, as you go through that.
And I'll sacrifice some of that mental maintenance to help somebody out. Own. Yeah.
For me, that's mental maintenance, right? Like,
yeah,
knowing that I'm helping someone also is the thing that makes me feel good. And
that's why I said before we record, this is like my little therapy session.
And I think not a lot of people understand that, man. Like, it's okay. Sometimes the work is the thing that makes you feel better because, you know, it's in service of creating for somebody else. And I do enjoy that part of like working on Black Visionaries. And even now, like I said before, my team was just me and two other people. Now our team is like 20 people.
There we go.
20 volunteers and like folks who were across different things like content and creative and operations and business strategy and the whole nine.
Growing.
You learn.
They see that vision and they want to, they feel the same way. They want to help out.
You learn that when people see faith or have faith in what you're doing, they're going to be like, yo, like easily, how do I get on board? It's not like you can cheap anymore. And even for you and anyone in general, like as you're growing what you're doing, it's important to also realize you're not the best at everything, right? You're the best at your thing. So the more you can tap people who can help you get better in areas you are excelling in, the more everything else you're doing will grow.
I love it. How can people get involved with Black Visionaries, learn more about you, have these conversations with you? What's the best way for them to contact you?
Definitely on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Good.
I'm a creator.
Leave a note, listeners, that you listen Aaron's B&E podcast. I'm sure it always helps when you leave a little note when you're connecting. If you go to personalize invite and then you get like 200 characters,
put it in the personalized invite. Put it in, if you got a DM me, you should put it in the subject line. But 100% down the chat all the time on LinkedIn. I'll follow Black Visionaries. So it's at Black Visionaries Lead on Instagram, and if it's on LinkedIn, it's just Black Visionaries. Both have a gold B as the logo. So
you good
for us, you'll find us. And just in general, like, I'm always here for career advice. I enjoy, you know, pouring back into other people because I remember how I felt when someone did that for me. So pay it forward because you can never pay it back.
Love that. Thank you so much, Aaron, for coming on.
Of course, man. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.